Okay, greetings. Thank you, Alice. This is Brian Cute, ATRT2 conference call with the Address Supporting Organization. Greetings to all who've joined. Thank you very much for your time. What I'm going to do at the outset for the ASO members who are on the call is outline where we are, that is a review team, in terms of our work, the areas of focus, and primarily this interaction is about hearing from you as we went to Durban and at the ICANN meeting and met with the supporting organizations, ACs and SOs. This is part of an extension of that interaction and outreach, and primarily we're interested in hearing from the community and the stakeholders their views as we develop our report and recommendations. So let me take a few minutes to outline for you where we are. The review team is moving into the drafting stage of its work. We have a report and recommendations that we are going to deliver to the ICANN board by December 31st of this year. We've had a number of interactions with the community. We've put out a questionnaire for public comment and received inputs in response to that. And right now our timetable has us issuing a draft report and draft proposed recommendations mid-October for public comment, and to be followed by attendance at the Buenos Aires ICANN meeting, and again, a series of interactions with the ACs and SOs to get feedback on the proposed recommendations and draft report. So we're having this call at an opportune time where we're really beginning to formalize our first pass on what we think our recommendation should be. That being said, so you understand what our work is, the scope of our work, we are tasked under the affirmation of commitments to review ICANN's implementation of recommendations from the prior three review teams that preceded us. That is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team number one, if you will, the Security, Stability, and Resiliency Review Team's recommendations, and the WHO is Review Team's recommendations. So one of our tasks is to assess ICANN's implementation of the recommendations of those review teams. Another discrete task we have is to make recommendations with respect to the review process itself, make observations and recommendations as to this review process and whether there can be improvements to it. And thirdly, to look for new issues, that if there are areas where the review team believes, based on input from the community, that there can be improvements in accountability and transparency, to make specific recommendations to that effect. So that's the scope of our work. What's important from our perspective is that this review team, to the greatest extent possible, act in an independent and objective way. We recognize that we all come from different parts of the community and reflect in some ways the stakeholder interests from the group that we originate from. In your case, Fiona Osanga has been a terrific leader driving the work of Workstream 4. But we need to be independent and objective, and one of the ways we can reflect that in our work is that we operate on the basis of facts, and with facts, analysis, and conclusions and recommendations. So sorry for the long-winded introduction, but I wanted to have you and have a fair understanding of what our scope of work is. What you see up on the screen, hopefully you have access to the Adobe, is a list of questions that we've developed over the course of our work. We think these are salient questions to help inform our work, and the questions are up there for a guide. If you would like to speak to any or all of these questions over the course of our conference call, your thoughts and inputs are welcome, but don't feel bound by them. If you have specific issues you want to address or raise for us, please do so, and you know, direct us to facts that we can use to integrate into our report. So with that, I'm going to open the floor for questions or clarification, or for anyone who wants to pick up the questions and speak. And before I open it to the ASO members, I have Alan Greenberg's hand up. So, Alan?
Thank you, Brian. Just one more note. These are questions that were raised either because someone on the group raised them or they were raised by someone in the community. They're not necessarily things that we've already decided that we will have recommendations on. They're just issues that were raised from one of a variety of sources. Thank you.
Thanks for that clarification, Alan. So with that, this really is your meeting. We're interested to hear from you, and I'm watching the Adobe to look for hands up. If you're not on Adobe but you'd like to make an intervention, just please speak up and we'll get everybody in the queue. So with that, the floor is yours. Are there any hands or any comments? Oh, let me check. Is Fiona Asanga, are you on the call? I see you on the Adobe.
Yes, I'm on the call.
Thank you, Fiona. Is there any thoughts that you'd like to offer in terms of the conversation and interaction with the ASO?
One of the things that came up, if I remember from our last ASO conference call, as we were planning the session with HRT2, was that members from the ASO felt that probably in reviewing the policy development process of the DNSO and being able to give recommendations on how to improve on it, we would take time and look at and share the highlights of the ASO policy development process that is very much community-driven, that is very dependent on input from various stakeholders across the different geographical regions that are represented within ICANN. So using the structure of the regional internet registries and the affiliations that the regional internet registries have, we have policies that are developed for specific regions. Then we have policies that move on to be global policy that are now ratified by the ICANN board and that are discussed at the ICANN level. And so we were, because for me, getting in and not having been involved in the GNSO process, one thing that really stood out was the fact that in the GNSO, policy development processes are named after the policy. Whereas, on the numbering side of it, yes, there's a name for the policy, but the policy process, the process through which the policy goes to get stakeholder participation and approval and finally ratification by the ICANN board is one policy development process. So for us, the policy development process is just basically a procedure, a set of procedures that have to be followed regardless of what policy is going to be used. And at every stage, you find that there is interaction with the community. When it is a global policy, it means that it's something that within the different regions has been identified as an issue that should be addressed across all the regions. And therefore, there's a process of getting leaders within the different regions who form a team of authors that drive the policy. Then we find within the ASO, we've got a policy team that is appointed every year from, again, across the different regions, who are people who look at the different policies being discussed across the different regions and recommend on similarities for those policies to be considered for global policies or when something has been agreed with the different communities and it's moving on to a global policy that also facilitates, play a facilitating role to ensure that that gets to now be streamlined. So sometimes wording will vary from region to region. If the wording can be exactly the same, it gets to be adapted now as a global policy and it's able to move to the next level where it's presented to the larger ICANN community for input. And input is received and the authors go back and accommodate it into changes if it's possible. Where it's not possible, there has to be a justification written on why it's not possible and all that is exchanged. And of course, there are time frames attached to all of these processes. So that by the time it's going to the ICANN board, to be ratified as a global policy. It has actually received consensus literally across all the geographic regions. And we have thought that that should be something that probably can be used to see where changes can be made in the GNSO process. The procedures of the global policy are all on the ASO website. So the details of how many days and the time frame are all on the ASO website, and that can be looked at from there. So looking at that and in comparison to the more complicated GNSO policy development process, it would be able to give some guidance on what could be borrowed from that to give the GNSO process a more community involvement approach, in the sense that all of us being in ICANN will know, yes, there is this policy that is going through and these are the clear stages of where it is at. So sometimes I think some of us end up lost when they're just so many different policy development processes with different names.
Thank you, Fiona.
That is what I asked. I don't know that anyone else from the ASO or NRO who are in the call have something else to add.
Thank you very much for that. And I did omit in my outline a particular piece of our work, which is the engagement of an independent expert who is providing an assessment and analysis of the GNSO PDP process. That's an input that will be coming in to the ATRT2 and will be integrated into our report. So thank you, Fiona, for giving the background and pointing a finger toward that important piece of our work. Inputs from ASO on those questions obviously would be welcome. And just another piece of background, there has been discussion on ATRT2, and if you look at question number 10, does the community embrace decisions made in regards to IP addresses and AS numbers? A recognition by this review team that this area is one that doesn't get a lot of, or hasn't gotten the focus of prior review teams, and noting the importance of it. I think Fiona's background is very helpful in terms of how the policymaking process works in the ASO context, but please, if anyone has thoughts to elaborate on that or suggestions with respect to the GNSO PDP process, it's a wonderful area to focus on. So I'm looking for hands, suggestions, points on those areas or other offerings. And I see Wilfred. Please.
Yes. I'd like to start just with a comment with regard to the question number one. For my situation, I would not be able to provide any input about GNSO policy development, as I haven't participated in any of that. So that's sort of just to set the background. With regard to question 10, as a non-native speaker, could you explain a little bit what the meaning of embrace decisions is? Is this asking whether sort of everyone is involved in making the policy decisions, or is this pointing fingers at the effect of decisions on the community afterwards? Thanks, back to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And let me first note that the word embraced comes from the affirmation of commitments. So there's a specific reference there, and that's why it's embedded in this question that was developed. There isn't an appendix to the affirmation of commitments that gives clear interpretation of the term. For myself, I certainly can see the connotation of, is it embraced or are the decision embraced after the fact? And speaking to it through that context, clearly not an easy thing to measure necessarily, but that's one connotation. I think another connotation that's equally acceptable is in looking at how the decision is made. Does it go through an open process where there's opportunity for input and active input of community members can be a reflection of how a decision is embraced. So I think either lens is a fair lens. And I hate to do that to you, but to put the question back to you, Wilfred, is are there some things that you see either in the ASO process or other processes that reflect the embrace of the community of a policy decision that are worth worth our focus?
Yes, I think so. Because in the numbers area, the policy development is, as Fiona has already pointed out, is first of all regionalized, and it really starts in the regions. And if some activity or some issue comes up and the policy discussion starts in one area, then the ASO is sort of providing the glue in assessing whether the policy proposal would have any impact on interactions with IANA. And sort of this is the required definition to make a policy proposal into a potentially global policy proposal to be then treated within the framework of ICANN. And sort of these grassroots things are in all the five regions open to everyone, and there is no membership requirement of any type or any sort. And most of the discussions are pulled out and developed on the mailing lists. And there is even the notion of you don't have to do business or be physically living or having any particular interest in one of those five regions to be allowed to participate in the discussion. So my assessment is that in the numbers world, the policy development is really open to everyone, of course with the footnote, everyone being interested in that. And thus, I would answer the question sort of, are the decisions embraced as yes, because all the parties interested had a very fair chance to chime in before a decision or before a consensus is reached. Of course, like in any environment, those people or those organizations or those groups who or which do not participate in the discussion might later on not be totally happy with the results, but I think that is just a real life environment and we have to live with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Could I ask any other feedback on this aspect of the process of policy making? The ASO is useful, so it's an open invitation. Let me ask a question. Have you observed in the past any controversy over a policy decision that's come out of this process? Any unhappiness? How was it reflected? How did you interpret that with respect to the embrace of the decision made? And I have David Conrad's hand up from ATRT2, so David, please.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. I just noticed Adobe is giving me some interesting problems, so my apologies if any of this is confused by crosstalk. On the question of embrace, this question came up in our meetings in Durban, particularly with the board members that were voted in by the ASO. The question of what it means to embrace in the context of addressing. And I just wanted to clarify that in the, if you actually use Google and look up the word embrace, the second definition, I believe, is the one that is intended for use. And for those who don't like Google or don't have access, that definition is accept or support, parentheses, a belief, theory, or change, close parentheses, willingly and enthusiastically. That whether or not the ASO policy decisions or the address allocation policies that are provided to ICANN for global policy ratification are willingly and enthusiastically supported are, I believe, the thrust of the question. With regards to you know, whether or not the policies are willingly and enthusiastically accepted, I'm wondering whether the address communities have looked at the even the knowledge of the efforts of the various bodies outside of the normal context of you know, the ISP communities in which they operate. You know, one of the things that ICANN, I believe, is attempting to do is actually bring all of the various communities that ICANN has some impact on together in one place in order to sort of allow for a cross-fertilization. And I'm wondering, you know, what efforts the address communities have undertaken to engage in other communities of interest in, within the ICANN context. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I see John Curran's hand up. John?
Yes, this is John. I want to respond to several points raised so far. With regards to acceptance of the output of the policy coming out of the ASO, I guess it's important to realize that this policy is, when there's a consensus policy that's going to the ICANN board for ratification, it's already been discussed in every region, and it already is a consensus output. So I think the, as probably the ICANN board can and see, the outputs of the policy development process, at least for the ASO, don't have the same level, I guess, of contention or possible angst that may happen from decisions out of the GNSO policy development process. Someone's echoing. I think it's important to realize that the regional nature of the policy development process of the RIRs within ICANN provides two things, and it's not just regional for convenience of the service providers and end users and web hosters who participate. It's regional because it provides the ability to have many more meetings much closer to the community. Rather than a handful of meetings spread throughout the globe, collectively we can have 10 or 12 meetings a year that are often aligned with other meetings taking place in the region and far more likely to engage relevant stakeholders than a handful of far-flung meetings popping around the globe. I think in addition to a better level of engagement, when it comes to policies, they're discussed materially five times over and in different contexts, different cultural alignments. Some of these trade-offs may come down differently, and it results in iteration. It may not be a quick process to achieve consensus, but if the goal is a very good consensus or a fast process, I'll take a very good consensus every time. I think there's some real strengths in the global policy process that is used within the ASO. And to pick up on the last point that David raised, I guess with respect to engagement, because of the diverse meetings held throughout the globe, because the RIRs have, for example, done outreach efforts to specific communities, government. Aaron has done outreach to hosting community, for example. We have, I think, a tighter level of engagement with affected stakeholders or primary affected stakeholders. as Wolf noted earlier, it's very difficult to engage all affected parties because potentially that's every end user on the Internet. But by providing meetings throughout the globe, more frequently on a regional basis, I think we provide certainly a better opportunity for engagement than and an engagement that's meaningful, where someone's remarks, whether remote or on the floor, are actively considered in the discussion, than the typical remote participation and community engagement mechanisms that we see for the GNSO.
Thanks, John. David and Hans-Peter, if you'd beg your indulgence, I'd just like to ask John to expand on 2 points, if you don't mind, before we come to you. John, 2 things. The scope of participants, and it's clear that the concept is that it's open to all who are touched, if you will, my language, by decisions, policy decisions with respect to numbers. So that's a broad, open opportunity. One, has there been any analysis of actual participants and from which interest group they come from over the course of these meetings, any stock-taking and data on who the participants have been and how that relates to the broad community to whom the process is open? Question number one. Question number two, when you say that inputs are, I think it was actively considered or something to that effect, can you expand a bit on that as to the suggestion to my ears is that those inputs have a greater possibility of affecting the policy outcome, and if that's what you intended, can you expand a bit on that, please?
Sure. Let me take the 2 questions, and I will reverse the order for clarity. First, with regards to how input is taken, a given policy is discussed in a session. A session is the address working group of the particular RIR or a public policy session. It has various names, but that discussion is a open discussion with a presentation by whoever is coordinating that policy proposal. And inputs are coming from the floor and remotely and generally equally balanced. What I mean by that is it really isn't a question of someone filing written comments. It's a question of someone raising an issue. And the issue itself is what we're discussing, not whether it came remotely or whether it was raised in person, not whether the person has 5 stars after their badge or is just a disembodied voice. We're raising the issue and discussing about the issue on the merits of the issue. And so the input that a major corporation provides on a policy proposal is taken equally to the remote participants' remarks that come 5 minutes later during the review of that policy. And it's not a question of imprimatur or weight or representation. It's a question of what technical matter are you raising that needs to be considered. This, again, happens in 5 different regions when we're discussing a global policy. So I guess I want to make sure it's clear that the nature of the policy processes in the RIRs allow for open participation, whether that's people who are primary stakeholders who are directly affected, like ISPs and service providers, or incidentally affected, like their customers, or incidentally affected, like law enforcement and governments, whether it's in person or whether it's on the mailing list. So I think that's important. I'm not sure it's quite as clear when a given policy in the GNSO process is going to be discussed, when the comments raised on the list will be put on the floor, and how those will be addressed. Certainly, that might change be a significant change for how the GNSO were to do development. But I point out it is how we know that all participants have an opportunity using the processes in the ASO. Now, to come to the second point, you ask about how do we know, taking stock, how do we know the level of participants, and how do we know the representation or the communities that have been involved? We don't. While we have lots of engagement activities, we've also reached out to folks such as the at-large community. We work with operator forums. We work with meetings that have been held in conjunction, in many cases, with other associations. The fact is, we're not actually trying to measure what groups are represented because it doesn't matter. What we're trying to do is create good policy, and it's the issues raised by those who come to the floor that have to be addressed, not whether or not everyone had a chance to say they were counted. It's, again, not a question. Everyone does have a chance to raise an issue, but we're working focused on the output, not on the representation per se.
Thanks very much for that. I had David and Hans Peter in that order. It looks like it flipped on the board. David, if you don't mind, we'll have Hans Peter go, and then I'll come to you and to Alan. Hans Peter?
Yes. I agree with most of what John said, and this actually makes me think about the item 2 in your list, where I see a difference between the processes on the numbering side and on the naming side. On the naming side, moderation is that all the different stakeholders does not meet as a community to discuss stuff, but they meet in constituencies to make sort of points and discussion papers and so on, while at the RIR meetings in the right region, my experience is that I see naming actors, I see government employees, the same as on the GAC, I see law enforcement people, and I see operators discuss in an open manner and in an open forum how to find solutions to different things. So when we talk about the community, I think ICANN needs to have a look at how do we actually form a community rather than a lot of small communities, and how do we make them interact? And therefore, I also think that the question of how have the numbering community reached out to go to the naming community, I think it's actually it's working the other way around. The naming community comes to the numbering community when they have numbering issues to discuss, and they are already doing that at various levels in the different regions. At least that's my observation.
Thanks very much, Hans-Peter. David, and then Alan.
Actually, I was just wanting to get a clarification with regards to what John was saying earlier. But the impression that might have been gotten was that in order to participate in the RIR policy forums, one actually needed to be present either in person or remotely at the policy meetings. Could you clarify that? And also, one of the things that ICANN has and getting a little echo has received comment on is that, you know, during public comment periods, for example, ICANN receives a number of comments, and there has been some concern that there is no indication that ICANN has accepted and acted on those comments for each and every individual comment. There has been, for example, some request that ICANN address each and every comment directly that it receives in, for example, the public comment periods. How does the RAR community address the input it receives? Does it address each individually, or does it group them? And if so, how does it actually do that? How does it do that grouping? Apologies, it's 5 a.m.
Thanks, David. John, do you want to respond to David's questions, and then we can come back to Alan?
I'd be happy to respond briefly, and I apologize to my fellow ASO participants on the call, because I don't necessarily have all the regions down, but first and foremost is that while HRIR does tend to use a face-to-face meeting with remote participation as a place where the policies are reviewed and the input is reviewed and to determine a sense of how to proceed, it is true that the discussion takes place between the meetings on each policy proposal, taking place in a policy working group or policy mailing list in each of the RIRs. And so there are some mailing lists in each region, some of which can be blessed with several hundred emails a day, but usually much quieter. And these are where the people working on those policy proposals receive feedback from the community continuously, and I mean the greater community, any party can participate and respond. And then when these face-to-face meetings happen, a given proposal is put on the table and the input received and the major issues raised based on the input collected over since the last meeting are brought on the floor and discussed. It's possible that some of these issues have been dismissed or have been by the community. It's fairly plain that the community doesn't consider a raised issue to be material. But that's confirmed by having the face-to-face meetings, which discuss what happened on the mailing list, what issues have been raised. In this manner, I would say that the RIR process has a strong resemblance to IETF working groups and efforts on internet graphs, and that's a process that I think we know has been shown to be open and yet consensus building. I hope that addresses both your questions, Dave.
Thanks very much, John. Alan. Hans, Alan first. Hans-Peter, is your hand up from the last time, or is it up anew? Okay, let's go with Alan.
Thank you, Brian. This is an interesting conversation, but I just noticed we only have 20 minutes left, and if there are any other issues that anyone in this group would like to raise with the AATRT regarding transparency and accountability throughout the rest of the organization, this is a good time to raise it, because what we've heard is the policy development process within the ASO and their constituent bodies seems to be working relatively well. And certainly, however, if there are other things which need our attention, this is a good opportunity to raise them. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I was about to make the same prompt as well. There are questions up on the board in Adobe. They give you a sense of some of the areas that we're focused on. It is, again, an open floor invitation for any and all inputs. The ASO policymaking process is of distinct interest, since we are looking at the GNSO PDP process and likely to make some recommendations on that front. But please don't confine your comments to just the ASO policy process. Are there other issues or any other questions for the review team in terms of our work? looking for hands. Wilfried.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether this is the right place and the right time to have another brief look at the RT4 thing, the Huey's thing. You are probably aware that some of us, having been on this RT4, did have second thoughts about the activities after submitting the report. So my question to the currently active ATRT is, does this group intend to also look at the, I don't want to say processes, but at the activities which other groups within ICANN started after submission of the formal report of RT4 and the activities from the board? The reason why I'm asking this is because I fully appreciate the fact that the board has the ultimate responsibility and thus the board is free to double quote, do whatever they want, double quote. But I'm having some hard time at the moment after attending a couple of sessions in Durban to see or to really believe in the fact that the focus is put primarily onto following up on RT4's recommendation, set of recommendations, and not being sort of starved by the parallel activities to come up with ideas and proposals for a bright new world. But the primary question is this even an issue for the ATRT at the moment? Thank you.
Yes. Steve, did you want to pick up the question or did you have a different point?
Well, I had a different point, but I'll be happy to respond to this. But I want to be certain that I understand precisely what's being asked here. Is this
sure.
With respect to the WHOIS review team's recommendations?
Yes, it is.
And if I might ask one additional clarification, what is the essence of your concern? Does it appear, and I don't want to be putting words in your mouth, but does it appear to you that the recommendations from the WHOIS review team were either not accepted or aren't getting enough attention with respect to implementation?
No, my concern is more on the procedural plane because I would, for one of those team members, have expected the security group to work with us during the preparation of the report instead of submitting a sort of at least parallel, if not conflicting, report to the board. This is the background for my question.
That's a much more interesting question, actually, and I appreciate you asking it. I don't have a quick answer for you. The review teams, but you may be putting your finger on an important subtlety. Each of the review teams is selected by a process which is documented well enough, and then the review team goes off and chooses its own course. I don't know what happened inside the operation of the WHOIS review team. They certainly had the option, if they had chosen to try to ask the FSAC, Security Facility Advisory Committee, for advice or to have sessions with them. I don't recall or don't know whether or not they chose to or not. It's typical, I think, of all of these review teams to reach out to a certain extent and then to focus inwardly and write its report. And then it's quite common for anybody, to comment afterwards. Let me add another comment, which is more general. A concern I've had from now watching various expert groups, and I'm including the review teams that are part of the AOC, part of the Affirmation Commitments, and I'm including advisory committees that exist on a long-term basis, and other expert groups that are assembled. There is oftentimes, more often than I originally expected, and I've been watching this for more than a decade, a tendency for a group to decide on something and then to go marching pretty far forward with it, sometimes exceeding either their expertise and sometimes exceeding their mandate. And even worse, I've observed that these groups sometimes take a sense of ownership. Like they've decided, they've issued their advice, and anybody who doesn't follow their advice isn't doing their job. Sitting on the other side of this, on the receiving side from the board, and having watched, as I said, quite a few of these in different areas, some security, some economic studies, and various other things, my sense is that it's very important to have comments afterwards and to subject to the opinions, no matter how well thought they are or how forcefully they're presented, to subject them to these subsequent review processes, and then to proceed in a very careful fashion. So I recognize that it's a messy process, that it's sometimes unpleasant, but I think in the end it is absolutely necessary and healthy. I don't know if that helps you at all, but to the first point that you made, it would be perhaps useful in guidance to future reviews to suggest that they reach out more assiduously, more vigorously, to the various standing bodies like FSAC that are out there. Certainly, I know in this review process, ATRT2, we have been doing that, and in fact, that's what brings us to this call in particular with you guys. But I, you know, there's always room for more, and there's always a question of how much is enough.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
While I have the floor, Brian, I put into the into the chat a question that's on my mind. My sense of the history of the interactions with the ASO, between the ASO and the board, is that the board's job is primarily to ratify the decisions that are made, the policies that are put together through the very extensive bottoms-up process that the ASO has through its regional and then cross-regional deliberations. The only complaints that are on my mind that I can recall about what the board has done is whether the board has been sufficiently prompt in meeting the specific timeframes that are laid out in the process, and to the extent that we've missed those dates, it has been for very humble reasons, you know, people busy or the calendar just not lining up properly or whatever. I don't recall any substantive pushback. So let me turn that into a question. Does anybody on this call have any recollection of where the ASO's policies have not been dealt with in a satisfactory manner, except for the minor detail, what I'll call the minor detail, of whether or not we were prompt enough in saying yes?
Just so you know, Alan, if you're still there, I am now en route to my office and cannot see the Adobe. So if there are hands up, Alan, would you kindly call out the queue?
There are significant hands up. I was going to address briefly the question on the Who Is Review Team, but then we'll go on to the other hands in a moment. I think Steve addressed most of what you raised. An interesting question, which I don't know the answer to, is was there an FSAC member on the Who Is Review Team? And if so, what was the, you know, what kind of interaction was there there? My recollection, however, is the FSAC submitted its report as a response to the Who Is Review Team, just like many of the other ACs and SOs did. So, and that certainly is completely within the process. But I, you know, what happened during the process, I can't tell, and whether that was a problem in staffing the WHOIS review team that didn't include FSAC or some other, you know, problem along the way, I can't really say. Certainly, this team is reviewing all aspects of the response to the WHOIS review team, and we will be going into some detail on that. We have David Conrad, John Curran, Louis Lee, and Steve Crocker again in the queue, in that order.
Take me out.
You have to take yourself out. I can't do that. It will
I'm
go
gone.
On to,
that was a mistake.
John,
I apologize.
Was that Steve saying take me out?
Yeah, and I did.
Oh, okay. David, you're first then.
Yep. In response to Steve, there was one situation that I recall generating, if not reaction at the board level, but definitely a reaction, is when the IPv6 global policy was put up to the board. The board had actually requested a review of that from ICANN staff. There was, a bit of a negative reaction on the part of at least some members within the NRO to staff looking at the implications of allocating the /12s to the RARs as the initial allocation. But that's the only case that I'm aware of.
Thank you, David. We have the next. Louis Lee, are you on mute, perhaps?
Mute, perhaps?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Great. Thank you. In response to Steve's question or comment, the board typically is, as a global policy is coming through, working its way through, the board is kept up to date, or at least is updated by myself or another member of the ASOAC or the ASOAC-appointed members of the board, of the progress of the global policy and also its major implications. So by the time a global policy reaches the board, there should not be any surprises. And the board, having seen that a global, at one point, having seen a global policy has a good chance of reaching the board in between board meetings and might not have a chance to adopt or act on it, has tentatively adopted or given powers to the CEO to adopt it and then let the board formally adopt it at a later point outside of the window. So I would thank the board very much on having seen that issue come up and taking steps to mitigate any problems as far as timing and seeing that that particular global policy was not contentious. There was another point, and I've forgotten, so I'll just go back in the queue for next time.
And there is no queue right now. Oops, we now have a queue. John. John Curran.
I'd like to take an opportunity to comment on one of the questions on the list, which is transparency sacrificed for expedience when the board has a difficult decision to make? If yes, provide examples. I will not remark on anything particular out of the GNSO process. But I will instead summarize an experience in the ASO community, which is that because of the requirement to have materially the same text in five regions in order to change policy. This is a remarkable forcing function for understanding the issues involved in a given policy change and to really work on trying to understand other people's concerns and accommodate them. I don't think there's any circumstance short of the term emergency, which I'm sure the board knows when it wants to do such and why, I don't believe there's any normal circumstance that warrants sacrificing consensus or transparency in order to make a decision. There's very few time bombs built in to the Internet protocols, to my knowledge. The only one I can recall offhand is IPv4 itself and its address size. So all the changes we're making actually are optional. They really, truly are. And I don't think the board should ever compromise on transparency or compromise on consensus building. I think telling people it will remain the way it is until you can show you've considered all the material issues and address them is a great way of encouraging the type of work that needs to happen on good policy. We have that function built into the five RIRs in the ASO, and we've seen policies take 2 years to get through it. I'd rather have a policy take 2 years in such a process than iterations of reviews and appeals and counter-reviews and ad hoc inputs that might occur otherwise. And I would ask that the review team, when thinking of that question, think carefully about why a policy decision would ever have to be sacrificed for expedience.
Thank you, John. Any other comments on that or anything else? We have 2 minutes left, so we're getting close to the end. Is there anyone else who wants to get a last word in? Anyone from the review team? The ATRT?
This is Brian Allen. I've got a couple of housekeeping points for members.
We do have Louis' hand up, though.
Okay.
Louis, if you can be quick.
Okay, I just want to jump into address number 14. Are the working methodologies of your group fully accountable and transparent? If not, how could they be enhanced or improved? I think we've fully established that we are fully accountable and transparent on the ASO side with the different RIRs and the different regional communities. I do want to say that even so, we are trying to enhance and improve it by pushing some of the topics and allowing the ICANN community to have a chance to come to our meetings or maybe even participate over mailing lists by letting them know what are the current activities within the ASO, not just on policy, but on outreach, trying to increase outreach by going to the different, not just at the ICANN level, trying to establish a kind of a, maybe even a 10-minute session on a Monday where there's unconflicted time so that everybody can be notified of what's going on, at least at a high level, and they can have the chance during the week to approach us individually or in a bilateral manner between the SOs and ACs. But the RIR staff, along with community members, are going to industry meetings, conferences, and put ourselves out there to be available for even non-ICANN type folks to
to participate in one manner or another.
Thank you, Louis. Brian, thank turn you. It back over to you.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks to everybody, everyone from the ASO for the exchange. Very, very much appreciated. This is an open process. Please be on the lookout for our draft report and proposed recommendations in mid-October timeframe. There'll be a comment period, and do take advantage of that. We have an email on the site, the HRT2 site, if you have additional thoughts and inputs. And as I said at the outset, facts as well to help guide our thinking. That's welcome. But thank you all for your participation. Two quick orders of business for the review team. Please do, if you haven't responded to the doodle poll for tomorrow's call, we're trying to make arrangements with ICANN policy staff, and also provide your travel requirements for the Buenos Aires meeting to staff as soon as possible. And if you have any questions on those two items, feel free to hit me on the email list afterwards. So again, thank you all very much for joining us. Very much appreciated. Take care.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you all.